Episode 435 with Kat James is brought to you by U.S. Wellness Meats. Now, this place is such a great and awesome website. For those of you that eat meat and animal products, this is one of the best places you can go to. They've got such a huge variety and array of different types of organic grass-fed beef. They have grass-fed beef as well as bison, lamb, poultry, duck, pork, rabbit, seafood, grass-fed dairy. They've got all of the fats that you can buy. They've got bone broth. They've got the organ meats and tons and tons and tons of really great products at U.S. Wellness Meats. Next time you're in the market to stock up on some meat products that are super, super high quality, go through our website and it'll help support the show. And we are also brought to you by Thrive Market. Now, this is sort of a revolution in how people are going to be buying food online. I really am a huge proponent of the way and the business model of Thrive. It's like a Costco membership, but the prices are ridiculously low and incredibly inexpensive, up to 50% off. All the things that you normally buy in your health food store or buy elsewhere online, this place offers them for 50% off. So there's free shipping, and it's an amazing product. All of their stuff is organic, and you can shop by diet if you're a raw food person, or if you're a vegan, or if you're a paleo person, ketogenic diet. They have everything at Thrive Market. So next time you want to make a purchase for household items, anything, go to Thrive Market, check it out, because you're going to save a ton of money. So if you want to check out Thrive Market or grass-fed U.S. Wellness Beef, you can go to extremehealthradio.com/435, or you can check them out in our store as well. Here we are again. Now I'm with my co-host.
I'm back.
Back with a vengeance. Miss Kate.
I hope with a vengeance. That sounds powerful.
Yeah, we've had to take a little bit of time off due to my back injury, and but now we're back.
We're back. Excited.
We're back.
We're on target.
Excited.
Man, we have some good shows lined up.
Yes, we do. We do. We do. All right, so this is episode 435. We're going to be talking to Kat James from informedbeauty.com about her work, and we're going to be talking about some of the dietary changes, sort of the dietary, what's the right word? Dietary programs, the sort of, you know how people go through these, or mass cultures go through these dietary phases where people say, oh, low fat and low this, low that. So we're going to be talking about some trends in that respect, and Kat James has some interesting ideas about all that. If you guys would like to check out the show for this particular podcast, you can go to extremehealthradio.com/435. Unfortunately, we will be unable to take show notes today, but if you guys can take them on yourselves. And today we have Kat James, like I said, from Informed Beauty. She's a beauty expert. She's been doing this for many, many years. She has written a really great book called The Truth About Beauty, and she's a transformation expert. She has her transformation program is called Total Transformation, and she's joining us today. Kat James, are you in New York today?
I am.
Ah, how's it in New York today?
Oh, gorgeous, just like yesterday.
Coming into spring?
A little hotter. Oh, yeah. And you know, we never have a spring, so I'm just grateful that we've seemed to have had a little bit of a spring here.
Ah.
I hope that it's been a good spring for you.
Oh, it's been, you know, it's weird. It's almost gone straight into summer. It's like a heat wave.
Ah, that's the usual case here in New York.
Yeah?
Yeah. We're sweating over here.
I know.
Oh, no. Okay.
But it's okay.
It'll come back. You'll get a little taste of it.
Do you travel around? Because I think I got your information from I guess a mutual friend or contact, at least, Robert Morningstar. And I think he said you travel around a lot.
I do a lot. So about in 2000, I started doing these transformation programs, which are based on something that I kind of intuited and put together way, way back in 1990. I had, you know, the eating disorder, so many things that, you know, our topic today with the Biggest Loser study, that are brought to mind, because I was really, I get what that challenge is like. And, so way back in 1990, when I had come to New York and was a makeup artist and to, the big magazines, lots of celebrities, et cetera, but had an eating, that eating disorder, was surrounded by all the models, et cetera. And, finally my health started to fail, and I figured that out. And, once I figured, and it's, I say it lightly, figured it out.
Yeah, like it happens overnight, right?
You've got a 12-year eating disorder that is heroin-like in strength.
Yeah.
And you white-knuckle your way through every day, and you find out years later, and they never tell you this, that it's literally like a heroin addiction. When they look at the brain scans, for example, of overeaters and heroin users and alcoholics, it's the same burnout dopamine receptor site. So,
what was your food of choice back then?
Shoot, gosh, it could have been, it sounds kind of crazy, but like a can of frosting.
Oh my gosh, you know,
it did not matter what the food of choice is. And today, you know, people would say, oh, so you don't really, you don't love food anymore, right? You know, because biochemically, I am a different animal. And it's interesting because they talk about this hormone leptin a little bit lately. And because they've got a leptin drug in the works, they've tried to create a drug for this hormone. Not many people know about leptin, which is not only the satiety hormone, but affects every system in the body and inflammation and your neurological health. But that hormone is something that if it's not working and if we're not sensitive to it, which was certainly the case in all of the contestants of The Biggest Loser, whom this study said gained all their weight back and that their leptin levels were really low. If they're not talking about sensitivity to the hormone, because that's what matters, not how much of the hormone we have. Well, back in 1990, 4 years before leptin was even discovered, I had these fleeting moments of freedom from my eating disorder, which I tried to replicate. And after about a year and a half, I was able to make this incredible freedom feeling that I'd never, ever felt happen 24/7. And the interesting thing is I did not know that I had harnessed the power of leptin until maybe 14 years later, when the foremost expert in the world on the hormone, Dr. Ron Rosedale, overheard me describing not only these symptoms that I had created in myself, but replicated in other people, because I got them to come to my beauty cruises and sneakily fed them the same things that freed me from my, not only my food issues, but from just my body's predisposition to be a fat storing machine. Literally, you can turn that around and become a fat burning machine. Again, a sensation very few people, even slim people, don't understand this in general.
How did you, what foods did you eat to reverse that and bring up your leptin?
The last food in the entire world. So I was at with Self Magazine and one of their nutrition editors way back when, and none of these people are still there, so I can say this. But, but I wasn't with the magazine. I was working as a makeup artist, and and they all had known my weight history. I'd be a very, very pear-shaped person, much have 10 dress sizes heavier than I am now.
Oh my goodness.
And because I never weighed myself again. And but my liver had started to fail, and that's what really woke me up. But I remember her asking, well, what was it that what did you do to lose the weight? And I said, well, the very last food in the world, this is the dawn of the fat-free era, mind you. She says, what was the food you ate that made you lose? And I said, fat. She would not even stand near me for the rest of the shoot. And so it was such a backward idea for that dawn of the fat-free era.
Oh, yeah.
And I was already over. I had already done that whole fat-free thing, and it had made me crazy. It had created the calorie restriction.
What did it do to your, I've never done a low-fat diet. What did eating a lot of fat or not a lot of fat do to your mental state?
Oh, it makes you crazy. It makes you depressed. There's a Lancet study, and I cited it in my book, The Truth About Beauty, how not only does it make you infertile not to eat fat, but it makes you depressed. Our brain, of course, is made up of fat.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, it was so, it broke my heart to see the beginning of an era where even healthy people, by their nutritionists, were being recommended rice cakes and fat-free snack wells, this and that.
I remember that.
Just, if you had a few little pounds to lose or didn't want to gain, menopausal weight, just avoid fat. And this is the greatest, most damaging lie. Cholesterol is actually needed for inflammation and reproduction and mm-hmm. libido and joie de vivre and for your brain to function.
Well, people are still, even today, people are still unable to wrap their minds around that. People are still afraid of fat.
Yeah. And also, they don't know that the cholesterol, in my book, I had a whole section called Shedding the Deeper Layers of Fat Phobia. And the problem is that we are actually lied to on a lot of things that have influenced the medical community. Ansel Keys and these different studies regarding fat were cherry picked. The countries that did not have the results they wanted were left out of the studies. And in the Framingham study, which was one of the largest studies on fat over a 40-year period, they actually lied about the conclusions, directly saying the opposite of what was true. What was actually true in that study were the people that consumed the most fat and the most cholesterol lived the longest.
Wow.
And it's the heart disease thing. None of the cholesterol issues come from dietary cholesterol. All of that cholesterol is recycled from the liver, never from dietary sources, just minimal, mm-hmm. if ever, and always in response to the last thing that most people would think caused clogged arteries, and that is sugar and cheap vegetable fats, which cause the fissures in the arteries and the small particle LDL, is just doing its job. Which is to patch inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And if the inflammation is gone, then your triglycerides go down. Triglycerides respond with cutting sugar and things that turn to sugar mm-hmm. out of the diet. And as soon as that happens, you cannot have any buildup. And the entire problem is from the sugar.
Yeah, it's funny because people think, if I lower fat, I can lower my heart disease risk and lower cholesterol and all these things. But like what you said, it's causing microscopic tears and inflammation inside the arteries.
Yes.
Then your body creates the remedy, which is cholesterol, to patch those things up. It's all caused by sugar.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Not a lot of people are going to like to hear that, are they?
No, because they want to keep eating sugar.
Really, you look at the blockbuster drugs and the statin drugs, and they cause dementia.
Uh-huh.
They cause muscle wasting and they cause the first heart attack more likely to be fatal. And people don't realize this, but it's a recipe for other blockbuster drugs to do this whole lowering of fat.
And then when people are on, what are the main ones, statins and things like that? When people
statins,
are on
there's
those.
Another one coming down the pipeline. They're going to have the first injection that selectively lowers LDL. We're talking about the antioxidant substance that fights inflammation and carries your fat soluble nutrients throughout the body. So this is the first time that will be ever used on
humanity. Wow. Isn't that amazing? I mean, they're going to keep getting so creative with these drugs, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before the show, Kat, I was shocked at a statistic you said. That is it true that 3/4 is it of Americans or is it of people
overweight
in the world?
Or obese? 3/4.
Three-quarters.
1/2 Americans. Okay.
Oh.
1/2 is either insulin resistant or diabetic.
1/2 of all Americans.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So overweight, I think, aren't they saying is like, or obese is classically considered to be 30 pounds overweight? Is that right?
I don't know that one. So
yeah, somewhere around there though.
Statistics. Yeah,
but that's amazing.
Mm.
Hey, Kat, did you hear about? I just saw this in the headlines recently that one of the contestants of The Biggest Loser, because that's what the you've done a lot of research in this study regarding that TV show. But I just saw one of the contestants of that show just recently died. I forget what it was, a heart attack or something. Do you know about that?
I don't know that one. I've been looking like about a month ago when that study came out, and it was something like all but one. The study showed that all but one had gained back all their weight. Wow. And I'm wondering if but mm-hmm. if you look at their diets, and they don't talk about that. So what I have to do is read between the lines and look at, you know, what the commentary, and that's, you know, horrible news, but what they were eating. You look at this, and they're all eating low fat. I mean, they're pulling the skins off of their chicken, and the one who lost the most, something like 198 pounds, he was exercising five times a day, and eating fat free. Hmm. Now they can't eat anything, but they, and then they're saying, so it's basically, they're saying there's a set point and your body will go back to it. It's a little bit of a dubious thing, the explanation I'm hearing.
Kind of strange.
And extrapolation, because if they had gone about it the right way, they're basically saying that what I did for myself and have helped others do through my programs for 17 years now is not possible. Mm-hmm. And by what they're doing there is not acknowledging that first of all, they're acting like leptin is sort of important, maybe, you know, it is the determiner. Leptin is the determiner of how much food you're going to eat. And what happens is it's made by the white fat cells of the body. So the heavier you get, the more circulating leptin you have. But the problem is in the hypothalamus of the brain, there's nothing that's reading the leptin. It's not picking up on the signaling anymore. If insulin, leptin, blood sugar, the same foods that would cause diabetes, if they are happening and you're consuming them too often, things that spike blood sugar and thus insulin, and thus leptin, mm-hmm. then just like we become insulin insensitive, especially as we get older, we become leptin insensitive. And anyone who has been binging or raising their blood sugar on a regular basis is not going to have any, the neurons in the hypothalamus are not going to be able to read that hormone. And therefore, the signaling you're missing is literally the signaling that tells the brain when you, the organism, have eaten enough. And that is a beautiful, incredible signal that is not active in almost any American.
And I think a lot of people are eating, I mean, this is, you know, something we fall into a lot, but we're mindful of it and we catch ourselves, but people eat too fast, right? So
Actually, speed does matter. People don't talk about that, even the order in which you eat your foods. But what really is surprising to most people, even very health conscious people, and I was eating what I would call the advanced health food diet once I moved to New York City after being raised in Michigan, where the food I ate was the worst you could even imagine.
We've all had those times, haven't we?
So I went to the health food diet. You know, even my desserts were from the raw food bakery here in New York City. Uh-huh. And it was all brown rice and soba noodles and no white flour anymore. But what happens is once you have the biochemistry, either of using food as a drug or a candida yeast issue, you've been on enough antibiotics and you get cravings. Once you have this biochemistry, you can use very healthy foods to raise blood sugar, and you can use a bowl of berries if you're vulnerable. So people that are vulnerable and already gaining weight or already have issues with food are very different than what I call the Tarzan types, mm-hmm. the healthy, slim types that have not really had to watch their weight and don't understand people who binge. They have a very different threshold at which something raises insulin, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. And it's the rises in insulin, which also accompany generally rises in leptin. And that's the whole point. And so they're not going to create, you know, they have insulin drugs, but what happens there? People take insulin and they're not sensitive to it anymore. So they have to take more and it stops working. The same thing would happen with the leptin drugs, which is why since 94, when that hormone was discovered, they have not succeeded in something that has worked well. So people need to regain sensitivity, and they're 3 to 4 days away from being able to do that. That is the big surprise.
Really?
3 to 4 days away.
3 to 4 days away. Okay. This is something I observed long ago in science, literally since 2004 and after. has caught up with so many of the things that I observed. I didn't know that I was manipulating in people and causing this incredible set of symptoms of the drop off in appetite, a sudden surge in even energy, deep sleep, because it balances the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems. And all of these symptoms happen literally after generally 3 to 4 days of not spiking blood sugar and consuming enough fat. And there is a withdrawal period. I call it the day of reckoning. And all of this has borne out in the science. So thousands of miles away, literally less than one handful of other people were manipulating this with patients.
Well, let's get into that in a little bit, because I want to hear, and I think all of our listeners want to be involved in that, because like you said, only three or four days away, we can do that.
That's encouraging.
Before we do that, though, I want to get into this study that you're talking about concerning The Biggest Loser. But before that, I want to ask. I just want to just say something, and I think it's involved around this show, and it just seems to me that The Biggest Loser and shows like that recently, we don't really watch TV very much ever, but sometimes when we go somewhere for a few days and we're at a hotel, we'll see what's on. And I was watching one of these shows about, these really, really obese people who are, needing to lose tons and tons and tons of weight. And always during the show, it inevitably comes down to gastric bypass surgery. It seems like these shows are just advertisements for that
the
surgery.
Glorification of it.
Isn't it? It's crazy.
Yeah. And they're what's coming down the pike, they're encouraging that. I mean, there's no doubt that the study, said, well, when they did the gastric bypass, it didn't leave them with a completely destroyed metabolism. So maybe there are some advantages to it. And then, of course, you don't have a way to absorb all your nutrients and it brings on other symptoms. Well, there's also another trick that they have up their sleeves. And it's a capsule, believe it or not, attached to a catheter that they're going to have people take that is turns into an inflatable balloon inside the gut. And yes, it can rupture and that can be a problem.
Oh,
but
my
what
gosh.
Is now? What is this capsule?
Yeah, I wish I could remember exactly what
is that
it's
like
for?
An explosive.
Just look up balloon, search balloon and catheter and you'll probably get there.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
That's crazy. So they want to give that to people who are obese, I guess?
Yeah.
Golly. Rather than just changing the diet and learning about the principles of how the human body works, it's so bizarre.
And going for just to return function. Now, see, the thing is if leptin was only the satiety signal, I could forgive them a little bit more for staying silent on it. I'm sorry. The powers that be understand what this is. But leptin controls inflammation. It upregulates tissue healing. It frees up testosterone, which for both men or women, independent of exercise, will give you a much higher muscle-to-fat ratio. Mm-hmm. Independent of exercise, I need to say that again because, exercise is great. It is not a great weight loss tool. However, this hormonal sensitivity is the answer to the weight because leptin, when the hypothalamus is reading leptin, it absolutely regulates. If you're underweight, it will cause you to gain the right kind of weight. And if you're overweight, it will continue to so dominate your appetite that people like me, who had the eating disorder since I was 12 years old, or people who've never really, the way that most people think hunger and satiety happen is hunger is honestly just a blood sugar low for most people. They don't even know what real hunger feels like. I didn't know what it felt like. Most healthy people don't even know what it feels like.
Yeah, we don't
and
know.
Then the satiety is sort of this vague, stretching feeling or, kind of having a sense, I probably should stop now, but it's vague, especially if what you're eating tastes particularly good. And whereas if you are having leptin signaling, all of a sudden the satiety signal is shocking. You can be one third and after you flip, and this is my word and it's not a word that others have even thought of. And I call it a flip because it's a change that happens in my program the third or fourth day, but they're saying that really this change is supposed to happen like 5 days into, 5 days to 2 weeks. And when people do this at home, because it's not intuitive and it is unbelievable, the psychology of it, I've found over 17 years, I'm literally, pretty much the Jane Goodall of leptin therapists, because there's no one else who's lived along with people and watched the actual transition, not anybody. It can't be done in a lab, and most dietary studies are done on the honesty policy of food reporting. Mm-hmm. And this is where people are literally, in my captivity, so to speak, and I am in control of everything they're eating. Mm. And whether we're in, Maui, Tuscany, the Caribbean, or Costa Rica, or wherever I am doing this program, and that's the travel that I do. So it's a very interesting observing it, because a number of things can make the difficulty on day two or three. And those things would be, your history of eating fat. If you haven't been eating fat, the gallbladder needs fat and needs practice eating fat. People lose their gallbladder when they go on fat-free diets. And then you also have most people, how much intervention have you had with antibiotics, and what was your diet as a young person? That's going to predict, what your yeast die-off would be like. And people who do my on-site programs generally work with me in advance so that they can enjoy, the on-site experience and not be in total misery.
I would imagine, Kat, that, many of the people that come see you, their diet during their childhood was most likely like mine and everybody else's, which is primarily processed, refined carbohydrates.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah, exactly. But what makes this even more difficult, as I'm mentioning, is just the intervention with antibiotics and the intervention with the fat-free. And to the degree that people do that, helps to predict maybe how much they need to prepare going into it. There are certain supplements, for example, that help people digest fat. And even the foremost experts on this I wouldn't say, they're the most renowned experts. They're like, wow, you use that. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what? Why wouldn't you use lipase for those who haven't been using fat, since that's going to help you digest fat?
What happens if a person does not kind of gently lead in with some of those supplements and things? Does it hit them like a brick wall?
Or they just dive right in?
Absolutely. So there are several things happening. Literally, this is the most fascinating thing. When you shift into the body preferring fat as its primary fuel, which it does the moment you become leptin sensitive, which is like the new world, especially for people who have been fat storing machines all their life in spite of tons of exercise, which that was the case with me. I was teaching 6 or 7 dance classes a week this very fat storing machine. Uh-huh. And when you become leptin sensitive, suddenly the body is not preferring sugar as its primary fuel anymore, which it's only supposed to prefer in a famine. Suddenly, you are actually burning through what you're eating. It's insane. And you don't have the sense that even anorexics have, that they're fat-storing machines and that if they eat fat, it's going to just land on their hips. And I've actually said probably some of the most politically incorrect things ever to the people with eating disorders who have come to my program. Mm. I'll look at them and I'll say, you know what? You are a fat-storing machine.
Yeah. It was funny.
I'll say, do you want to know how to become not a fat storing machine? And I'll say, you must eat fat. Oh. And they'll look at me and their eyes will widen.
Just
and
crazy.
You must eat it in the absence, because the body will default to using sugar as its primary fuel the moment you are spiking blood sugar. So you can't just add fat. You must not have anything that spikes your blood sugar. And that's difficult for a few days. But after about that third or fourth day, you smell things differently. You want the different things. You suddenly want what you've been having. The second day, you can't even look at fat. You don't even want to look at it. Your body wants to reject it. And also, here's the biggest, aside from the yeast die-off, which will give you flu-like symptoms, if you don't, then there's ways to do these things in advance. And that's a big part of these. I also do online programs, so people get on the online program before they come and see me in person, and they go through this stuff. But there's the yeast die-off, but then there's the literally just the body's change from using fat or sugar as its primary fuel. Again, only supposed to use sugar as primary fuel in a famine, mm-hmm. to using fat as its primary. There's always a day of drop out. There's always a day where the body is rejecting the new fuel. It's rejecting the fat, but and still wanting the sugar, but you're not giving it the sugar. You're giving it the fat, and it's saying, no, really. The first day, it tasted good. Second day, sorry, I can't do this. And in the morning, you know, it's, you don't even want to look at any of the fat.
Yeah.
And then the third or fourth day, it's like, all right, okay, all right, all right.
There we go.
That happens. And then the fourth or fifth day, it's like, where's my fat? Where's my fat?
Wow. It's like the body's just like a little child almost.
It's incredible. And then you'll go into a restaurant and, you know, whereas most dieters have been fat-free people. Oh, yeah, give me a side salad and give me a little lemon with a little oil.
Yeah.
And then you look at that and you go, all right, where's the fat on there? Where's the avocado? Give me some feta. Give me a little goat cheese. Give me some walnuts. Where's the fat? You don't even feel complete without the fat. And then you don't want the bread. It smells different and the food courts smell like death. And it's pretty
That's
amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah. Hey, Kat, I wanted to ask you, what's the difference or are you adopting these types of diets that are out there like the paleo and the ketogenic and things like that? Yeah. How is your program different, or does it just adopt a lot of those principles?
Not at all. It's really, really interesting because my goal was sanity. So it removed the psychological black cloud that was over me, the depression. There's no more ADHD. There's no more depression. People who've been on psych drugs for 17 years will say, I got off in less than a month without any of the problem that I experienced when I tried to get off before. It actually heals dopamine pathways, changes, you know, all of this stuff. I want to answer your question because I was going to lead into it. Tell me again, Justin, what you were just asking.
Oh, just about how, because it sounds like
diets.
What you're talking about. Yeah, like the ketogenic and the paleo.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So what led me was a set of symptoms, okay? And these, you know, some could say, oh, it's low carb, you know, and oh, I've done Atkins and things like that. And only have I realized over the years why these things cause problems for people is the excess protein. And there's still a shyness with regard to the ratio of fat to protein, and it's a very big deal. And I've only learned to be able to scientifically describe it in the last maybe 7 years. And that is that you, for example, with ketogenic diets, not all ketogenic diets will get you leptin sensitive. You'll go in and out of leptin sensitivity. You won't stay there because ketogenic diets, again, even if the ketone strips are showing a lot of ketones, they're high protein. Mm. Excess protein, here's the thing. We've known that it causes any of the negative reputation that low carb has gotten has been because of the effects of excess protein, which can be a stress on the kidneys and the liver. But what's been more recently figured out is the mTOR. It's a pathway, a very huge. It used to be a pathway related to the cancer risk. mTOR, small m, capital TOR, and you don't want to know what it stands for. And so that pathway, it will either cause genetic expression in the direction of cellular replication, which if you're not yet an adult, that's great. But if you're an adult, that's going to predispose you to cancer.
Hmm.
Or the genetic expression in the direction of cell remodeling. Remodeling is what you want after adulthood. That's what repairs cells and makes you live longer.
Okay.
And if you have excess protein, you're looking at cell replication. So it's definitely predisposed. So people, what is the first thing people do when they cut down sugar? They up the protein.
Right.
And they cut down on sugar. They say, oh, I'm eating less sugar and a high protein diet. It's a risk. Yes, they'll feel much better and they will have much fewer sugar cravings and they'll start to burn more fat. So it's, you know, however, some of the scientists that are looking at this cancer connection say it's more dangerous than even high carb. So it's very interesting. Now, when you up the fat ratio enough, then, and that depends on someone's heredity. It depends on if they're repairing from injury, if they're an athlete, all of these factors. So I work with people to figure out what their ratios would be and also what their thresholds are, because everyone's threshold for having their blood sugar spiked and their insulin spiked is different and dependent, again, on heredity, but also the frequency and severity of blood sugar spikes as a young person predicts that. And then I help them to understand what they're going to go through with withdrawal and what they should plan for and which supplements, you know, and it's important, for example, to have things that take care of fluid balance and electrolytes leading into it, because people who have a lot of inflammation, most of the people, and anyone who has weight gain, that's mostly inflammation related to edema, often to cortisol, often to poor sleep. And, mm-hmm. you know, the fat underneath the belly button is pretty much late hours. And so those people are going to pee a lot on day 4 or 5 or 3. They will pee so much that their rings will spin, and some of them won't need their CPAP machines, and they will stop snoring very shortly. It's just a pretty incredible thing.
So have you? Oh, did you want to say
something? No, go ahead.
No, do you have a lot of people that have had, because there's a lot of different issues going on with people with flu shots and vaccinations and all these interventions and things like that. I'm sure you've worked with people from all of those kinds of issues, right?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And interesting, I've had a lot of doctors that say have her call me because they've never seen, you know, I'm not going to make a claim on any of these things. I'll just say that, for example, someone with hepatitis C who had been to 5 different integrative physicians and had IV therapies and at the most lost 10% of their viral load, dropped 10% of their viral load, 90% drop in under 2 weeks. And it, you know, it's for your listening audience. Hey, that's all coincidence. It has nothing to do with what I did. But let's just say that their doctor was saying, you know, I've never seen, this is extraordinary. I've never seen anything like it. I'd never worked with anyone with hepatitis C. I'd never worked with anyone with vasculitis or interstitial cystitis or Wegener's granulomatosis. And these are miraculous turnarounds that the doctors are like, what happened? And one doctor, you know, with the vasculitis, in tears, the person had written their will. They were a few days away. Literally, they'd given them the last Cipro and the last steroid, and they were barely breathing. And this, you know, I won't even say this turned around. Let's just say not many days later, they were able to breathe easily. And 2 weeks later, when they weren't even walking anywhere by themselves, walked into, and their rheumatologist and pulmonologist were absolutely shocked. And no more interstitial cystitis. It's something that they give up on. You know, after 5 years, that person wound up hosting the program. And autoimmune issues, I didn't mention that leptin is an immune modulator. So leptin modulates immunity. No one's going to be sensitive. People aren't sensitive to things anymore, not sensitive to dairy, not sensitive to certain foods. It's only certain strategic dairy that I have on the program. But what's really surprising are the foods that people think will not spike their blood sugar. Lentils, yams, of course, you know, which are so often touted as being low glycemic, most berries, for certain people. And it's just the Tarzan types that can have these things. And when I see what the big raw food gurus are putting in their smoothies at breakfast, it's no wonder that there's nobody with any kind of food issue or blood sugar issue or postmenopausal or later in their life who is going to be able to do that without developing a gut or not this level of peace with food that I'm talking about.
Yeah, because a lot of those smoothies, I went through that where a lot of the smoothies are just tons and tons and tons of fruit and you know, it's amazing. I mean, I don't think we're maybe designed to eat all that fruit in a drink like that. But
not at all.
These people, though, it's so interesting because, you know, I'm sure you've seen the 30 bananas a day people.
I was just thinking of them.
Oh. Yeah, it's just crazy, right?
It's insane.
I mean, they honestly think that that's the diet and that's the way to live. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
I just don't know how that's possible. I would all my teeth would fall out.
Right.
Yeah. I have so many, you know, things. And even... Yeah. The vegan question is very interesting. I do work with vegetarians, but with vegans, I don't work with them. And I can't argue with anyone ethically, and really, I would not. So I would leave that alone. But, you know, there are certain micronutrients and fat-soluble vitamins that just don't happen in that situation. But it's also, if someone's metabolically challenged, it's just simply hard to find enough things to eat that won't, that will keep the fat to where they need to be. There's a compensatory aspect to it. It may not seem natural to some people, the ratio of fat. It's not like you have a big plate full of fat, because your appetite goes down so much that it's rather an elegant way of eating, because there's not much mass in what you're eating, and yet you feel so satisfied by it. And as a, you know, former food addict, for me to say that, you know, someone who needed to binge on all sorts of just crazy things, to say that it's just so deeply satisfying and that you enjoy food more than you ever did, is something that the woman that I was would have found hard to believe. But back to the vegan issue, it's just simply very difficult to get those ratios if you are metabolically challenged at all. And so those who wind up able to continue to be healthy and vegan are generally what I call, again, those Tarzan types.
So, Kat, what would be a good sort of dinner meal that you would look forward to eating? What would be on the plate?
Oh, gosh. Let me think. I'll just look at what I had in the last week. Duck confit. Or a big fat grass-fed burger with compassionately raised pork with no nitrates and sugar, and some raw pepper jack cheese on it, and wrapped in some radicchio leaves, which to me it's heaven, because you've got that bitter taste
spicy
against all that salty, savory stuff, and a bun to me is a dead piece of whatnot. It has nothing to do with human food.
I love that. Yeah, people are craving. So
Frankenfood, as our friend Meridian likes to say.
Yeah, Frankenfood. Yeah, no, so primarily or lots, or, you know, high percentage of protein and fat. And,
well, I'm curious then, you
well,
asked
here's
about...
the thing, and here's the caveat. I just want to say, you know, if someone says, all right, well, I'm going to have a burger tonight, whatever. I'm just going to say that if you spike your blood sugar at all for 3 days, you're not a fat burner. So I have to say, you know, and I followed up with my cheesecake, and it's like the densest, most beautiful cheesecake. I tell people, you cannot bring these foods home to your family because they will put on weight from them. They're not a fat burning machine.
I see. So what are you going to say?
Well, I was just thinking people, like you said earlier in the show, Kat, people have a hard time wrapping their mind around the breakfast. You wake up, you're not people who are used to eating fruit and, you know, light things. I guess some people do a lot of pancakes or heavy.
I think a fruit is heavy because if I have fruit, I will immediately have no energy and begin to actually feel fat pouring onto the back of my arms.
See, that's interesting. That's the flip of the mind then. I think we're so conditioned.
Yeah, because fat doesn't make you fat.
Right.
It's sugar that makes you fat.
So what is a breakfast? I'm just curious. Like, what is a breakfast? So,
yeah, that's a good question.
Well, obviously you could envision eggs, you know, but people learn all sorts of kind of recipes that have taken me about 10 years to develop. I have my griddle cake recipe, which actually has no flour or grain, and you can pour a better tasting Belgian waffle than you remember from your childhood.
Oh, yum.
And
wouldn't
and
that then, be high,
you know,
carbohydrate?
There's a hot cereal, you know, that again is it's not going to have your typical oatmeal, etc. And it's of no use, you know, to really go into these here, because it is amazing what people will eat. Always they will mess this up within 3 or 4 days unless they do at least, I'm finding, 12 hours. In other words, where I can really, there's the whole category never spoken about with ketogenic diets that I call borderline foods. These are foods that in small amounts, you know, are okay, but a little bit more. And you have to know your own threshold, which is why, here's again unique to my program, is that I talk about how this set of symptoms, and I do it by feel, not by number. Numbers lie, because some people with differing thresholds can abuse the numbers and have everything in one sitting as far as carbs or whatever.
Oh, right.
And they always do. The people that don't have the food issues, which are always the ones who wrote the book. You know, there's so many leptin books out there written by runners and athletes, and the people who are not enslaved biochemically are the ones who are the authors on these. But people have to realize the science is there, but the diet is frontier.
Uh-huh.
It is not Ben. It's, and so you'll have people writing books on leptin, like Byron Richards, who has passed away at a young age, unfortunately, and he was a runner, allowing berries for breakfast and talking about leptin in the same book. And I 17 years, people paying, you know, around $3,000 to attend the program in person. It's much less to do it online, and online it really works. But there, I have to produce that result within 4 or 5 days for them. So I had to very begrudgingly remove little things like alcohol tinctures and coffee substitutes and anything with chicory and agave. I mean, and even other, you know, natural sweeteners. Begrudgingly, I'm like, that's not even going to work. That's not going to work. And I'm like, you're kidding. I even used to do whole juicing of dark greens, and that caused problems. That was when the people with glucometers would come out and say that's the only time that it went up. And I need this to work initially very strictly, because only once you're strictly there do you feel what it's like to fall out of it. And so, it sticks out then like a sore thumb if you even get so much as slightly tired in the afternoon, let alone those cravings, because those are gone.
Mm.
So, Kat, when you said dark greens, when you were juicing, what did you have in the juice?
So things like wheatgrass, or things like mainly, you know, if you do wheatgrass, but if you have a juice and you're putting enough lemon in, it took 10 years for me to realize that for 6 months, a guy who was not even heavy, it kept two different people were not resensitizing to leptin for more than a month, even in one case, 3 months, because they were doing too much lemon juice or lime juice, if you can even believe it.
That's crazy.
Now,
Isn't that nuts?
A squeeze of it is great. It works. But just like doing three lemons and making lemonade with three lemons in there was too much. And so, you know, these are, I don't
wow.
do these things just out of totally trial and error, not with any predisposition or bias against any of this stuff.
So now, Kat, what do you do with people that are sensitive? Because you mentioned eggs a little while ago, and as you know, that's one of the top five foods that included in a list of inflammatory foods for people. What do you do for people who can't eat eggs? Are there substitutes?
Yeah, those tests are not done with leptin sensitive people, and no one is sensitive anymore. So people happily eat them with the greatest health by far of their life.
So most people can do it.
Most people aren't even as sensitive as they're being told, frankly.
Oh, okay.
And it's without the sugar and grain in the picture, without the other things that spike blood sugar, somehow they do them beautifully.
Oh.
And even, you know, the big one is our dairy things. You know, no one's going to have issues with butter. There's almost no lactose in butter.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing is the highest fat dairy has the least lactose. But people that would double over from having a little heavy cream. And I have examples again and again. I could sit there and do a whole show about people who used to double over or have to go to the bathroom from dairy who just absolutely don't. And there's no IBS. Fixes digestion, and that's part of balancing the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, which brings back deep sleep, and people can't believe they're going to sleep through the night, and they generally always do.
Are you guys able to do the raw butters and raw dairy and stuff out there?
Sure, but not raw milk. It's just too
sweet.
Not
raw milk. Yeah, we do the raw butter.
The thing is, Tarzan can do raw milk, and if I was not raised on the unfortunate foods that I was raised on, and never became metabolically challenged through too much, you know, blood sugar spikes in my history, et cetera, I could probably have done the Weston Price, you know, the raw, all of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we like the ghee. I do really well with ghee.
Ghee's great. Ghee's great. Yeah. It's unnecessary for most people once they're leptin sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
As far as there's going to be no worries about sensitivities.
So you have here, as part of your email here, you know, some of the things that are wrong with popular diets. What's wrong with the paleo or the ketogenic?
Yeah,
where do you see people going wrong
protein.
With that?
That's my feeling there. Now, too much protein, we talked about the cancer, the liver, the kidney aspects, and you know, acidifying, and that's a big debate. You really can't change your body pH much at all,
yeah.
Unless your kidneys are no good. Kidneys keep that in control. But anything that's negative in terms of acidity would be the protein aspect of low carb. But here's the other thing. Excess protein turns to sugar. And so people will spike themselves. They will, and if you have a big yeast issue, men tend to binge on protein once they take away sugar.
I could see that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how much is it spiking sugar, and how much protein are people trying to eat? Is the whole 1 calorie per pound of body weight about, or 1 gram per pound of body weight accurate?
More like a half a gram per pound of lean mass.
Okay.
So if you go to your best weight ever and subtract 10%, about a half a gram per pound of that. But that is going to be changeable according to whether you're an athlete, whether you are recovering from injury, how well you digest, and how much you cook your protein. All of these things play into it.
Yeah, how you cook your food is a big deal, whether you boil
it,
eat it raw.
It's not digestible once you cook most protein. And the, you know, your as far as eggs, for example, if you have eggs 2 days in a row and they're bouncy and dry and maybe a little bit of brown on them, your stomach will want to reject them by about the third day. Just say, you know what, I can't look at eggs today. But if they're cooked the right way.
Do you do raw eggs or raw meat, anything
like that?
Absolutely.
So, you know, frankly, I don't require it, but there's a company called U.S. Wellness Meats, which has most of the raw crowd and the paleo crowd get their stuff from there, because the primal raw people, beautiful. And for the Tarzan types, that's beautiful. For those who are metabolically challenged, they're going to need to, again, not do all the raw juicing and the raw fruits and all of that. But it's very great to do raw meat. And my favorite, there was just a couple of restaurants, and I found one the other day in Midtown, which had the first grass-fed carpaccio that I had ever seen in the city. And that, to me, is absolute heaven. And that's raw, shaved beef. And I had steak tartare the other day, tuna tartare the other day.
Wow.
And these things are raw. And that's the body digests it beautifully. And yet so many in the community, the vegan community, will say the body just doesn't digest. It's not true.
Yeah, they say
it's
that,
very,
don't they?
Very digestible. And you see, you know, under live blood cell therapy, I've seen those very raisin-like unhealthy cells go become bouncy and balloon-like. But I had a debate with an extremely best-selling PH author, and it is just not true, in my view at all, what he's saying, that people can't be healthy, because we're seeing people, for me, and in this program for 17 years, best health of their life, without question.
And this was one of the PH authors you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. We probably had him on the show. I think I know who you're talking about. But I was going to ask you, have you ever played around with
leptin, by the way?
What's that?
He asked me how to spell leptin after a recent debate.
Oh, goodness.
So he had no knowledge of the hormone.
Have you messed around much with organ meats?
Absolutely.
Yeah? So, what do you think about those?
And I'm a little squeamish about the taste. I just don't like the taste of them. So again, this company I mentioned a minute ago, they have like a Braunschweiger, and they have a liverwurst. Uh-huh. And these are made with herbs, and I love to cut those up with a little goat cheese in a salad or in a romaine roll or something like that.
And kind of combine it with other
things. The
great
thing about that, and this goes back to paleo, you know, what we're practicing in this country as paleo is not exactly how they did it. They prized fat. Okay. They did not just go for the lean muscle meat and they prized fat. They went under the buffalo skin and ate that fat. They loved the organ meat, some of them fatty. And that's why, you know, the instinct is to get lean if you're going to get grass fed hamburger, but it's already leaner. Get the fattiest grass fed you can. Try that's again, this company, U.S. Wellness Meats has the, like the 72% lean instead of the 85% lean.
Now, do you work with people and rebuild? Do people need to rebuild their gut and their digestion before going on your program, or is that part of your program?
No, it happens during it, you know, because a prerequisite to getting back your flora balance is going to be cutting out all of the things that turn to sugar.
Right.
So I laugh at most anti-candida diets. They're allowing people to have things that absolutely sustain those probiotic communities. What is amazing is we now know, of course, the gut is the second brain, connected even by the brain by the vagus nerve. And so much of our personality, even they're doing fecal transplants and taking the bacteria from introverted mice and putting them into confident and outgoing mice and changing their personalities. And they took the bacteria from two female human twins. One was heavy and one was thin, and made those weight trends happen in rodents that they had put those bacteria into.
Isn't that amazing? They said there's even a study recently where they're working with children from Australia. I was speaking to a doctor who was talking about a colleague of his, and he's getting fecal implants from children in Australia who I guess would be the equivalent of something like an Amish child or something here, where they had never been vaccinated, never had any antibiotics, flu shots, any of that stuff, taking that fecal matter and transplanting it into children here who have autism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing what's happening.
Totally makes sense. Exactly.
Yeah, doesn't
it? And I even, that's a whole other show. You know, I had Andrew Wakefield, Dr. Wakefield, on my show, and the whole vaccination thing, and how it affects the microbiome. And the interesting thing is I wondered why the who's who of all of the things that happen once someone becomes leptin sensitive sounds like all of the things that happen once someone regains their gut flora balance, because it affects hormones and it affects the making of vitamins. It affects the processing of estrogen. All of these things are also affected. Reproductive hormones, sex hormone, people getting their periods back, even women, and reversal of all their menopausal symptoms, even at my program recently.
Wow.
And so, I mean, we're talking reversal of hair loss and no more sleeplessness and all of the weight gained in the previous year just gone in under a month. And so all of these things sound like what happens also when you regain your gut balance. And it turns out that leptin has a prebiotic effect, literally having a direct impact on the what comprises your gut bacteria. So this is brand new. So that's 2014 that was found out. There's all, it seems to be no end to this connection with leptin. It does everything.
It's so silly how, you know, seemingly complex this is, but not if you follow the right program, but how silly that, you know, the leptin injection is a thing on the table that people always think that there's just a quick way to shortcut this process. Mm-hmm. It's so sad.
Exactly.
Because so many people are going to fall for this.
Exactly. And it's like HCG. Mm-hmm. And when that first happened, I started seeing the very first people who didn't have all of these things happen when they resensitized to leptin, and inevitably they had taken HCG. And this is just, you know, how natural is it to inject or take a hormone that is only made by starving pregnant women, in a famine, and then they're eating 500 calories a day. And I deal still to this day with people who ruin their thyroids with HCG. Mm. And this is like the only way that they can start to eat normally, eat until they're full. It's the only way. And I have a woman for, you know, all these years, she did 18 rounds of HCG, cannot eat anything close to normal without putting on weight immediately. And now she's eating normally and has not, where our first victory is she hasn't gained weight for 3 months and is absolutely sated and has no craving. So, and now and once her sleep is coming back, and once that's completely back, then she will start to have this trend of the weight going down. But she's an exception only because of the HCG. Everybody else's weight is normalizing fast.
So what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, the work that you're doing with people, you know, a lot of people might focus on, you know, dress sizes and, mm-hmm. and getting slimmer,
scale.
And the,
yep.
you know, the scale yep. and the fat and all that stuff. But we're actually changing how the body's functioning, and it's affecting disease process. It's affecting our ability or inability to fight off cancer. And
organs
so,
working.
Organs working. It goes much more than just looking good.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that, you know, it took me a crisis. And as you know, a lot of people get into this area from whatever their crisis is. Mm-hmm. And but many people have been able to avoid a crisis by looking at this the smart way. You know, the huffing and puffing, that doesn't make good reality TV. In other words, it makes good reality TV. It doesn't make good reality TV to figure it out the way you just said, you know, mm-hmm. the biochemical smart way, figuring out your hormones. And I actually was offered to be the lead motivator on another extreme makeover show back in 2000 and refused because they were not interested in how I did what I did. They loved that I had this transformation where I was not even recognizable from this person I used to be. Mm. But it was more than the weight that came off. They're like, wow, you lost so much weight. And I'm like, you know what? I don't have this heroin-like addiction to food. I don't get canker sores. I don't have my horrible eczema rashes on my face. I'm not dizzy when I stand up. I don't get UTIs. I don't, have this tartar buildup and this scalp itchiness. And I mean, head to toe. It's all of that stuff is gone, and it's just called the body working correctly. And there's something incredible that it does for the spirit. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting on the spiritual point is that leptin, when you're resensitized to it, it grows the cerebral cortex.
Does it really?
A lot can be read into that.
Wow. Yep.
Certainly the cerebral cortex is our self-control center. And then the healing of the dopamine pathways, that literally changes the personality. I'm about to do a story called Nutrition and Personality for Amazing Wellness, which is the Vitamin Shops magazine too. I'll be talking about this. But the problem is that when you have burnout dopamine receptors, you have an addictive personality. And when you heal the dopamine receptors, you literally transform from addictive in your personality to motivated, literally.
Wow. So that's really interesting because people really attach themselves to the idea that I'm an addict and this is who I am and this is what I say I am and all of that.
Yep. And I protest, you know, a lot of the 12-step notion that you are always a recovering because there is no difference. The level of eating disorder and the level of eating disorder, some people are just carb addicts. But when you're talking, you know, the people that I, and only like 3 in 17 years have had a worse eating disorder than mine was, but we're talking 40 years of, you know, this enslavement. Mm-hmm. It is not different. And I am so free from it that I am more free from any issues with food than most thin people. I am a thin person now. I keep on, you know, saying those thin people.
Yeah,
but
those people.
I've been thin for 25 years and never stepped on a scale again, never reverted, never had another binge, all of that. And it's incredible. People don't want to be in that world, that hellish world, once they've experienced this.
Well, I like what you said about eggs because according to a blood test, show that I'm sensitive. I'm not allergic, but the blood test says I'm sensitive. So I like what you said about that because maybe it's, some of the other, maybe it's I've been eating too much fruit or something like that where I can start to eat eggs because eggs are just an incredible food. And I'm looking forward to, I'm going to start trying, I'm going to, you know, take on some of your approach here.
Here's the thing is, and there's a couple of stories. I don't know if people want to, if they visit my website, I can send them. One of them appeared in Lou Rockwell, and it will describe what these symptoms are. And more of these kind of what I call deal breaker foods that most people think are okay, you know, on paleo and these different low glycemic, so-called, you know, low carbish diets. And if they can avoid those, but as soon as you've gone low enough in your blood sugar spikes, the body will at that moment demand more fat, and you're going to have to give it more fat a little bit before that happens. And that's going to, you know, you can whisk some butter, melted butter, into your scrambled eggs, but you can't have a lot at the beginning, so it's a little bit tricky that moment where you cross over into it. But your body will demand it. And in the case with me, no leadership, no one, I never read anything about this. And I remember just these fleeting moments of freedom and trying to replicate them. And then I love my grains so much that I was slow about getting them out of lunch. And then after a year and a half, finally having my first full day with no fruit, no grain. And yet there are several fruits that we have on my program.
Okay.
But then at that very moment, all of a sudden, the appetite plummeted shockingly, and I opened up the refrigerator and nothing in there looked like food anymore. And I didn't plan a new diet and say, I'm going to go shopping tomorrow. And I had to shop because I'm like, all of a sudden, everything here doesn't even look like food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been.
We know
like
that.
An animal where I needed fat, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was really very interesting.
So, okay.
You know what I get scared for is just all these really skinny pregnant women.
Oh, my goodness.
That has to be a huge thing with pregnant women and the fat. They're so afraid to pack on more weight and, oh, scary.
Well, here's what's interesting, really, really interesting, is that when the people that have, and I have one obstetrician who the first pregnancy of one of these clients of mine was so horrible before she came, and she was a fat restrictor. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't breastfeed. She had horrible morning sickness, and then a bad recovery.
Horrible delivery. Yeah.
Horrible. And then she does this diet, and he warned her, oh, I don't feel good about you doing that. I want you to eat grains. And she started, and she felt horrible. And she said, I'm coming to your diet program. So she came to St. Simon's Island, and we did, as part of that program, had the best pregnancy ever. And her obstetrician said, I've got to look at this because, and then she lost weight so fast. So, and I hear this again and again with people who've had babies and are eating this way, that they lose weight so fast, people don't even think they're pregnant. And isn't it ironic that they're leptin sensitive? They're fat burning machine, and they're eating a very high ratio of fat. Mm-hmm. Probably at least 60% of calories is going to be fat, and so they're eating this way, and they have the healthiest pregnancy, the healthiest child, mm-hmm. and the best mood, and you're not going to have the postpartum depression. That's low DHA, mm-hmm. by the way. And you get your DHA because the baby is going to take that right from your brain for the development of its brain. It's going to be taken from what you consume, and it'd be denied your own brain.
Isn't that interesting?
And so, you know, it's amazing though that the pregnancy is so much better, but you really don't have as much weight gain. And you don't, and you lose it much quicker. So we don't need to gain as much, weight as we believe.
Mm-hmm. That's so good to touch on, because I've just seen so many. I'm working part-time at a speech therapy office, and I unfortunately see all these little tiny kids coming in with all kinds of stuff. And I thought, gosh, what were their moms eating when they were pregnant?
It's true, though. I mean, the mothers that are doing the thinness, you know, even the discussion of calorie restriction and fasting, there are different contexts in which to have that conversation. Because if someone's leptin sensitive, you will automatically maybe not even – you don't graze. You do not need to graze. Grazing is like keeping the beach ball off the sand. It's like – pop, 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 you know, or the pinball out of the pinball hole, you know. It's like, it's this thing we have to do, because all you're doing is managing blood sugar swings.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas once you're leptin sensitive, you know, more like the bowling ball going straight down the lane. There's no extraneous peaks and valleys. It's just straight on. And you're, you know, three times your productivity because of that.
Mm-hmm. So is the way for people that are listening to, I mean, I'm sure the average person has some issues with this leptin issue. There's no test for leptin. It's kind of like you have to kind of jump in, go through, and figure it out.
There's a test, and it measures levels.
There's a
test that measures levels, but that's a little bit irrelevant for sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Interesting. So now if someone is listening, and I know that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be listening that are going to be interested in getting your book or going through one of your programs. But what about people that are in relatively good shape, and they're relatively healthy, and they're relatively, you know, in good body weight, but they just want to start adopting some of the principles? Do you have a resource, some articles or a book or,
they can? First of all, you know, if what I find with slim people and even athletic, and I've had top athletes, I've worked with a Mets player and worked with one of the top martial art guys in his area, and they can have ADHD, they can still have cortisol issues, stress issues. And those are inflammatory. They become inflammatory issues. But I find that the brain, the concentration is an issue. But metabolically, if someone has good genes, for example, and wasn't raised on sodas, my book would be enough probably to keep them. Kool-Aid and sodas are sort of an indicator that you have unfortunately lost your chance to make it through your entire life without some degree of insensitivity.
Right.
Yeah.
And but if your parents they died slim, and you didn't get those things, then you are what I call a Tarzan type. And I can generally just look at two people and predict, you know, it's the husband who comes with his wife to the program. But they're always amazed at how way much more energy, even really skinny, lanky men will still say, I don't need to nap in the afternoon. And I have all this energy, and they concentrate better.
Wow.
But the book, The Truth About Beauty, for people who are not metabolically challenged is going to get them there. Okay. I had to disguise it as a beauty book. I came from Mainstream Beauty, one of the most quoted makeup artists of the 90s. And what's amazing is, you know, as soon as I lost those 10 dress sizes, I was on demand to be on camera as a spokesperson talking about what color eyeshadow goes where. And no one wanted to know how I transformed myself beyond recognition. So I had to tear myself away from six-figure contract after contract to be, you know, a poor author and get this done. But the truth about beauty is that labor of love disguised as a beauty book. So I don't want men to be afraid of what looks like a girly book.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. Yeah, right. So people can read that. And it's not necessarily, like you said, it doesn't have to be just about a beauty, but men can read it too.
Yeah. But that is the real thing. Like you said, you know, it's not weight and the external stuff. Some people need a crisis to wake up and just look at their health. I needed my liver to start failing at 24 to wake up and just say, you know what, I got to fix my liver, and then fix my liver first. And then, you know, made this thing happen. So, but if you are more metabolically challenged, I have the teleprograms, which are over a 3-month period, 4 sessions to 8 sessions, and it's 12 hours to 24 hours. And it's very effective. And I apply half of that toward if someone wants to do the on-site programs. And my next one is at a buffalo ranch in Kansas City, Missouri. I'm really excited about it.
US
Wellness Meats is actually sponsoring it. And that's happening July 22nd through 27th.
Oh, you're going to have the best food there then if they're a part of that?
Right.
They're always a part of it. So I always feature their foods, and they are sending to whatever program I do. I even managed to get some of their stuff to Costa Rica, where they don't know how to perfectly age and tenderize their grass-fed meat. It's like it's all over the country of Costa Rica. It's all grass-fed, and they don't know how to tenderize it and make it tender. So they're like, oh, that good U.S. meat, and they're really just importing nasty industrialized meat. I just wanted to let people know that there is the website informedbeauty.com. You can learn that information. I do have an 800 number, which is 877-54 total, if they want to know more about those programs.
Okay, cool. So when did you say the next one is? July 22nd?
22nd through 27th.
So what is it now? Early June?
June. So people got some time.
They got some time. Yep. So you have 3 or 4 of these a year.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. I do private programs as well, and sometimes families have me work with them, but generally group programs I do 3 or 4 a year.
That sounds interesting. And so when someone works with you, then and then once the program's over, then they can just adopt all the same principles for the rest of their life and just be on this path like all of us.
Absolutely. And sometimes a moving or some kind of logistical thing throws them off, and they can just get these little follow-up teleprograms that absolutely get them back on track. Nice. And also the program's been honed. It's pretty, the percentage rate of success is very high now, but you know, each time I do it, I see one little thing that some kind of loophole that people are exploiting, you know what I mean? And so it tends to evolve and get better and better. And of course, the recipes I've been working on, and people get this incredible collection, 17 years of the best of these programs. And so they're able to take advantage of those. But the recipes, again, because they're for different thresholds, and people of different degrees of challenge can use certain recipes, and some people can't use all of them.
Right.
So it's a very customized thing.
Yeah, because we're all so different. So it's all at informedbeauty.com.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Kat, for joining us today. I really appreciate your time and sharing all that.
My pleasure. And they can get those free reports if they want to sign up at info@informedbeauty.com or sign up for the newsletter. I could send them a menopause makeover story, or my Beyond Paleo story, or the leptin story that was on Lou Rockwell.
Okay. So they can sign up right there on the website.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great. All right. Hang on the line there, and we're going to close out the show.
Sure.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Okay. Episode 435 is in the can.
The lovely Kat James.
What do you think?
I think I need some new recipes. I think I need to try. I'm so bored.
Are you bored?
I'm bored. I'm kind of on burnout mode where I'm working with the most amazing practitioner, with my nutritionist, Nikki Moses from Moses Nutrition.
Uh-huh.
And it's great, and I've never felt better in my life, but man, I do feel like I'm on burnout. tons of cooked vegetables and hormone-free, you know, sustainably raised chickens meats and meats and things. But I don't know. It's funny when you have a... I don't know for sure if I have the MTHFR, you know, genetic thing going on or what, but yeah, I wonder what it would take for me to be able to get back into the eating of eggs. And I know Nikki talks about a certain way to make an egg.
Oh, right.
But to me, it just sounds repulsive because it's really runny and just, I have to have eggs like well scrambled or boiled or.
Yeah. I'd rather just drink an egg like in a Rocky
smoothie.
Balboa style.
Oh, just straight down?
Yeah. I'd rather do that than to make it in a certain way where it's kind of runny.
Like, oh, me too.
You know, I just don't like that. I'd rather just drink it like a drink. And just, you know.
To me, that's less.
Yeah, it's, at least it's over. It's not like, because when it's in a raw form, the yolk is still kind of contained within itself, and it's gross. But it's, you know, you could, that seems more doable to me than making that runny egg and or the
I
egg,
know
or the,
some
the,
people love the runny egg, but not me.
I don't like that.
Not me. That's not my thing. But
she's probably not a fan of separating the, you know, how people separate the white of the egg from. I mean, it's a whole food, so you should eat the whole thing.
Right. Right.
I think people are afraid of the cholesterol that's in the fat of the yolk and all that, but
I feel like the programming goes so deep.
Yeah.
You know, the fat freeze and the calories in, calories out. It's
well, think about all the people that I think are going to be, I mean, dementia is on the rise in a huge way. There's actually a free summit coming up.
The Alzheimer's, right?
The Alzheimer's summit that I'll put in a link in this show page, extremehealthradio.com/435. I'll put a link to the Alzheimer's Summit that's coming up in July, I think. But, I mean, I think a lot of that is people eating low fat. I mean, how many years did the low fat thing go through?
Huge.
It's like 20 or 30 years or more than that.
And it's still pretty big. I mean, we hardly ever walk down the middle aisle of the grocery store, of a regular grocery store.
Everything says low fat,
everything
right?
is. I mean, yesterday we had our families over for Father's Day dinner I prepared. And, you know, our families like regular ice cream every now and then. So we were looking in the thing. And, I mean, my gosh, one little tiny, you know, window of ice cream. You know, there was a whole aisle, but we were looking at one little part. And you saw, like, eight different things of low fat or no sugar added. And there's always just something trying to rope people in.
To this low fat thing.
To this low fat thing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I've been doing more fats lately. I put an Instagram
really about it.
Picture of all the different fats. I forgot to put in the cacao butter and the olive oil. But I think it's important to eat a lot of fat. I think it's really can help you reset your hormones and all that.
Yeah, the leptin thing is really interesting. I thought that was really good because, I mean... She had so much great information, but that show basically revolved around the leptin. Leptin. Isn't it funny that leptin is such an important player and such a huge hormone?
We didn't even know about it until
94. We didn't know about it until 1994. Was it 94?
1994. How crazy is that? We didn't even know about it.
I don't know. Isn't that crazy to you?
Yeah, it's so bizarre that we're still learning about, like, not just subtle, insignificant things about the body, but... Huge things about the body, and we just learned them.
What were people doing
in the 1800s, 1900s? I guess they were just eating more. I guess, you know, they were eating more healthy food with lots of fats, and so they didn't really have a need to learn about or to understand leptin because they were already healthy. But it's just interesting that we just learned that.
I tell you, it's just a lifelong journey because now I'm thinking, oh gosh, like... Leptin's probably a huge part of my thing, and I don't know what I'm doing for leptin. And
what do you think about the pregnancy thing?
Oh, I think that I've had such an eye-opening experience working at that child's, around children in the office.
Are all the women coming in low-fat kind of women? Or
not all, but I mean, we live in a very looks-conscious...
How do you say that?
Orange County.
Very Barbie doll.
Very Barbie doll. A lot of women are very, very tiny... And right after they give birth, or they come in pregnant to the office with a, you know, either a couple kids or one other child, and they're like a stick figure with a little watermelon belly. I mean, they're really cute looking, you know?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people get, you know,
massive
when they're pregnant, and there's nothing wrong with that either. But seeing these little people, I think, gosh, I wonder what they're eating or not eating, or if they're just afraid of gaining weight and they want this to. They think that the less weight they carry around when they're pregnant.
The less they'll have to lose.
The less they'll have to lose.
But you know what? She did so say that we're putting on too much weight during pregnancy.
That's probably been...
Or maybe as an average, maybe you're saying the extreme.
Right.
But as an average for all of America, that might be true. But she, you know, so But I think that eating fat, and I think eating a correct diet when you're pregnant. How about that?
Well, not only these women, not only the pregnant women, but what I'm seeing happen with these kids.
It's like, with the autism.
Are they having a lot of these issues because they don't have enough fat when they were, you know, when
developing.
The mother was growing the baby inside of her womb.
How about the depression and the postpartum depression in relation to DHA?
Mm-hmm.
Like how... Oh man, it's like, you know, people in mainstream world just don't know why these things happen.
Yeah, and some people just get morning sickness and other people don't. Some people just get postpartum, some people can breastfeed, some people can't. Our bodies are meant to do all those functions if we can get it properly working,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fascinating stuff.
Wow.
Good show. So if you're interested, you can check out her website, informbeauty.com, and that's it for us, extremehealthradio.com/435. For the actual show, if you want to listen on the website and check it out there. What else? Thanks for passing the show on to your friends. We really appreciate it. Thanks for visiting our store with lots of great health products in our store. And what else? Oh, thank you guys, all you recent people that have donated on Patreon too. A lot of people are donating now, keeping the show free. So if you guys like the show and you like what we're doing and you like... you know, what we're putting out there, you can donate to our show, and you can donate like $1 a month or something like that, $5 a month or $2 a month. And it just comes right out of your account first thing, one time a month at the beginning, and you help support the show. So if all of you guys did that, that'd be incredibly helpful. So we are going to be continuing to do this show. So the more of you that can help us, the better. And we appreciate all of you guys supporting our mission here. And, that's about it, right?
Wherever you are in the world, hope you're having a great day. We love you guys. Love showing up for this. And I'm excited to see the upcoming shows that we have lined
up. Lots of good stuff.
So hope you guys have a great day, and we'll catch you on the next episode.